Hey, yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. I am the Crown Prince of Charisma, the futurist, Mo, but really, it's not about me, and it's not about the guy who's my co-host, even though his name is Mr. Brett Podcast. He's the king of the casters. Brett, we have a guest on. We're extremely excited to talk to. Why don't you introduce him?
Oh, well, this man has played with a couple of our favorite bands, I gotta say, like Dirty Looks. Also plays with Dangerous Toys, and currently he has 99 crimes. And you know, the reason that we're talking about 99 crimes for us in this case is because they are on the Hollywood Hairspray 8 album from Paris Records. He is the guitarist and singer Paul Lydell. Paul, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Well, we're awesome because we're talking to you. So
all right.
That's, I mean, what more do I need? I'm good. We're totally good.
That's a win for us, and a sorry for you. But nevertheless, Brett mentioned it. You're doing the vocals on this. Is just so you can let Jason know you don't think he's such hot shit?
No. I've been singing in bands for a long, long time, so...
Wow, we're just saying that Jason is actually we had him on the show before. He actually dubbed us the Metal Nerds, and we forgot to mention that in the intro because we usually do.
That's classic. Yeah,
exactly.
So yeah, I mean it's great. We're huge fans of both Dirty Looks and Dangerous Toys, and honestly, now that we've heard 99 Crimes, I'm like, I can say that we're huge fans of 99 Crimes. I mean, great album.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate that very much.
And it's funny because of course we are going to talk about Hollywood Hairspray and how you got to be on that. But when I heard the song, like it's one of the standout songs on the album. And when I heard it, I'm like, oh, that's a good singer that Paul's found. And then it's just like, oh wait, it's Paul. It's like, damn.
Well, that's nice of you to say.
But yeah, so Rumor is the song. It's one of my favorite songs on the 99 Crimes album. So let's talk about how it got included, like kind of the process. Did Tom approach you about being on the album?
Yeah. Our album, the 99 Crimes self-titled debut album, was released on Paris Records. So Tom, who's the president of Paris Records, chose Rumor, which is sort of the second single on the album, as the song to go on the album. So that was cool with me.
Yeah.
it's probably maybe this, I think it's a song that certainly fits the Hollywood Hairspray sound, you know. It's that one of the things I like about the 99 Crimes album is that there is more than one sound to the songs. It flows nicely. It's an album that gets better as you listen to it, as you know, the album goes on, and it gets better the more you listen to it as well.
Yep.
But yeah, it's got a bunch of different sounds on it.
Yeah. I think I would agree. We tried not to have an album of, you know, all songs that sound the same. So it's sort of, within the sort of, I mean, our influences are sort of a lot of, you know, late 70s and early 80s sort of kind of things, and so I feel like we touch on a lot of those bases within those influences, and it just kind of comes out just the way we write, I think.
We got you had 5 songs, and then for an EP originally, and then you had added 5 more for the album, and then, you know, went from there. So how many songs actually were you trying to pick from for the album? How many songs could you have recorded for the album?
Oh, I'm sure we were over 25. I think we've now performed somewhere around 27 songs, different songs live. So we're writing all the time. And as a matter of fact, last weekend we debuted another song, you know, for the first time, and we've been playing a whole bunch of the new songs recently. So it's the writing thing is a constant process, and it's always been a pretty prolific band. So yeah, we could record several albums right now if we wanted to.
Well, don't let us stop you.
Yeah.
How fast can Paris release them for you?
Yeah. but you know, going in the studio and everything is an expensive process, so we're limited by that. Otherwise, you know, I would just live in the studio and be cranking out songs all the time.
So when you're performing your songs live, then the new songs, how much is the audience reaction? Are you paying attention to the audience reaction to see what they're liking, or is it more just how the band feels about the song and the way they're playing it when you're deciding what songs to, you know, are kind of trending towards being at the top of the list?
Yeah, actually, there's a bunch of different factors in that. There's number one, just the vibe that the song has in rehearsal, and then there's the way it feels, you know, when we play it live. And number two, there's the audience reaction to the song, which we do pay special note to. And number three, there's the reaction on social media, because almost without fail, it seems like the very first time that we play a song, the video is posted like online, and we get to see people's reactions. So that's a good sort of a gauge. We noticed that, for example, the song "Rumor" got really good reactions before we recorded it in the studio. Just like the videos of the live performances got quite a bit of reaction. So the people that, you know, do comments and likes and all that kind of stuff on Facebook, that really is noticed by the band, and probably often other bands too, as far as, you know, which songs are chosen for the album to record, because as artists, we can't always be the best judges of what we do. So we want to see what, you know, what people like, and what they would want to hear on the album. So that's those are all factors, you know, those are all factors in choosing songs. So like those factors were factored into the songs that to choosing the songs that went on the first record.
So then,
but I have to.
It's all good.
I just would have to say that there's several songs that I feel like could easily have been on the first record, and hopefully will make it to you know, see the light of day at some point. So yeah, I'm looking forward to album number two, as I'm getting at.
So are we.
All right.
Now, is it, when you're writing, is it, do you all get together as the band and jam through a lot of the songs, especially since you're going to be playing them live? Do you kind of write them out beforehand and prepare them before going to the band?
There's a lot of different ways. I mean, some of the things would just be, you know, one of the guys, would just have like, you know, sort of a riff and an idea. Often, I'll have like, you know, like some music, and a lot of times we'll use Dropbox too, and just put a sketch of a song up on Dropbox, and then everybody has a chance to kind of listen to it and sort of have an idea of what to play before we even get into rehearsal. But on the other hand, some of the songs are just written like right there in rehearsal, and you know, just like all three of us just kind of jamming and throwing ideas together. So there's a lot of different ways that the songs come together. I happen to really enjoy the whole writing process. It's one of my favorite parts.
Has it always been that way? Has it always been one of your favorite parts, or is it something you've kind of grown to more over the years?
No, it's always been a passion of mine. Yeah, pretty much the whole time that I've played since childhood, you know, because I think writing songs is really the best part of being a musician.
When you're sitting there and you're writing a song, you're with your guitar, you're messing around with it. What's that like when you come across that lick that you just know is so good? You know, I can only imagine that that's just, you know, what's that like?
Most of the time, the sensation is such that you're remembering it more than the sensation of creating it. It seems like it's just like, oh yeah, it went like this, you know, and then, but then you can't remember when you've heard it before. So it's that's the sensation. And as far as, you know, whether it's good or not, it's very difficult to judge right at the time that you're writing, I think. A lot of times, you know, I'll be like super excited about something right at when I'm writing it, and then later on, maybe not so much, and then often vice versa. But it seems like a lot of the stronger ideas do come easily. Rumor, for example, just wrote itself, you know. It just seems like that one was just obvious, I guess. of how it was supposed to be, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, does it factor in with the fact that that you're a three-piece band and you're the only guitarist? So, is there do the other members make suggestions? Is that something that's kind of feasible?
Yeah. The songs rarely. I mean, if it does happen to be one of the songs that that I had the original ideas for, it rarely ends up being anything the same. I mean, what I'm saying is that it doesn't sound like 99 Crimes until, you know, you have Jeff Lynne's input and Chris Jordan's input and, you know, their parts. And a lot of times there can be a song that I think is just kind of okay, and then after they add their parts, it's like, oh wow, this was really pretty cool.
Now, is that kind of the same from when he played with Dirty Looks and then being with Dangerous Toys, or is this kind of like a completely new animal?
You mean in terms of the writing?
Yeah, in terms of the way the songs came together.
Yeah, well, in Dirty Looks, you know, that was primarily, most of those songs were primarily Henrik's, you know. So you know, we would have there'd be you know, some input from everybody else, but in Dirty Looks it's primarily Henrik. And then in Dangerous Toys it's more of a collaboration. So as a matter of fact, Dangerous Toys is working on new material as well right now. We're going to play a new song called Hold Your Horses at our gig on Saturday night in Houston. We have some other ones that, you know, we're going to be busting out at some other subsequent gigs as well.
Now we got to figure out how we're going to get from Canada to Houston.
Yeah.
And then by the weekend. That sounds fantastic. How long were you go ahead, please.
Oh, I was just going to mention that Dangerous Toys is also playing in Austin on January 25th, which is pretty much an annual event. We pretty much only play in Austin once a year. So we're looking forward to that. And as a matter of fact, both of those shows, the show on Saturday and the show on January 25th, also features 99 Crimes.
Excellent. How long were you with them when you did Pista? How long were you with Dangerous Toys? I know you were fairly new to the band, so I'm wondering kind of how long were you with them, and did that affect the length you were with them, how you were writing or your input into that album?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I had very much input into the Pista album at all, because I joined the band in January, and boy, I think it was like 2 months later, we were back in California on recording it. So that was mostly done when I joined the band. But that said, the guys were all really cool about me, putting my own stamp on things, and they're all was really generous about accepting my ideas and all that. But yeah, the Pissed album was done right after I joined the band. Now the next album, the artist formerly known as Dangerous Toys, which that album was a dramatic departure
for sure.
From any other Toys album, and but the rule was anything goes, except for it can't sound like anything that we did in the past or that Toys did in the past. So it ended up having a whole different sound. So that album we as a band are real proud of and like that album, even though it's so much different.
Well, it's one of those really interesting cases, I think, where if, like, I'm a discography listener, and so as I go through and listen to the Dangerous Toys discography, it stands out, but because it is so different, it's like, I feel like I almost need to go backwards so that maybe that starts, that's near to the beginning rather than near the end. And then, because yes, like listening to it on its own, you can absolutely see the merits, but it's so different compared to the other things that it can certainly throw you off.
Yeah, that's why we called it the artist formerly known as Dangerous Toys, because it's like, yeah, people won't understand this, We knew they wouldn't. But.
And that album came out in, I think, 1995, I think, and so. I mean, all these years later, so many years later, and yet there's no doubt that there is, the fans of Dangerous Toys were jonesing for that next album. What's that like, knowing that after all these years, the fans are patiently still waiting, still there knowing, or, wanting that album?
Yeah, that's really cool. And we've had, a lot of good reactions to the idea of us recording more and everything. For a while it seemed like nobody really wanted to hear new music, and they're only interested in the older music, but the reaction since we've talked about that we're writing and recording, that it's people seem to be excited, so that's pretty cool.
So these songs, what album do they sound like they come from, or is it something brand new again?
Yeah, I feel like it sounds like, one of my favorite albums in the world of all is the Aerosmith Rocks album.
Oh, nice.
Understandable. Yep.
The stuff coming up seems to be sort of, along that line, certainly not so far away from the first Dangerous Toys album that people, you know, wouldn't dig it, but it's also different enough that, you know, it's not like, oh yeah, they're just going back to, you know, rewrite Tease and Pleasing or something.
Now I just want to talk about the Aerosmith Rocks album. A Lick and a Promise, my favorite track from the album. What's yours?
Oh man, Rat in the Cellar would be totally, Last Child. Love that, you know. Boy, on and on.
Yeah, such a great album.
Well, no, when you are listening to all the other music and stuff like that, like how do you find that you filter what you hear and how do you feel that it influences your playing and your songwriting?
It seems to go back to the roots. It seems to go back to, you know, high school and even, you know, junior high and all that. When I was kind of first starting to learn to play and, all those influences from back then seem to be just, really coming out now, you know, like the, say for example, the, Black Sabbath album, Heaven and Hell with Dio singing, you know, and, you know, all the Zeppelin back then and gosh, you know, Triumph and Rush and Van Halen and all the Ozzy, you know, I was a total Randy Rhoads devotee, you know. Got to see him live, as a matter of fact.
And wow.
That was quite life-changing. So it seems that, you know, stuff I hear now doesn't seem to filter very much into the writing. It's not like, oh, I heard a song the other day and now I'm going to write a song, you know, inspired by that. It seems to be just coming from just roots of, you know, way back when.
It's funny you mentioned Triumph because, Brett, what was it you said to me right before we called Jason?
Oh, you mean Paul?
Oh, sorry, what did I say? I'm sorry. Paul.
Well, it's interesting, yeah, because...
We're going to edit that part out. Sorry about that.
But yeah, no, it's because as I was listening to it, I actually thought that I heard some Triumph in there. And like your voice, you know, it actually sounds to me like a kind of, you have a Rick Emmett kind of vibe to it. And so, I mean, obviously I'm a big fan of Triumph. Well, now, so
I should point out that there's a song called Avenue on the record.
That's the one, yes.
Yeah, and that's not me singing. That is our bass player, Jeff Lynn. And, yeah, he gets compared to Rick Emmett all the time. He's got a phenomenal voice. And yeah, that's people's reaction often. They're like, oh, Rick Emmett.
Yeah, totally. I wouldn't know. And, yeah, it's interesting because at the same time, he still has a, you know, similar sound to you, so it's, but I mean, wow, that's two of you that have great voices in the band. That must help out a lot.
Yeah, and it enables us to like sound live like we do on the record, because, you know, he's such a great singer, and so all the, you know, the strong choruses with the two vocals and the harmonies and all that, you know, that's what it sounds like live. So
with right. These 27
we're,
songs,
we're really
go ahead. Please go ahead.
I was going to say we're really. I feel really lucky to have, you know, both Jeff Lynne and Chris Jordan in the band, because they're, you know, such strong players and cool, easy people to work with.
Avenue is actually behind Rumors, my second favorite song on the album, and I partially because of this song and his singing, but I think your guitar solo on that is phenomenal too. Is he also doing more of these 27 songs? Or is there any more where he's doing lead vocals?
Yeah, there are.
All right.
Yeah, and so. We've performed other songs too, where he's singing lead also, and there's a lot of the songs, kind of have sort of that dual vocal thing going on too, for a lot of it. So there's a lot of singing for both of us.
So then one of the things that I'm interested in, like, cause I know that's one of the elements that got you into Dangerous Toys and stuff like that. Like how long ago did you really figure out the singing part and is that an important part of you being in the other bands, is just being able to handle the harmony vocals?
Yeah. When Dirty Lips was touring, there was times when Henrik would just have me sing because, for whatever reason, he didn't want to. At one of those shows, which happened to be in Houston, Jason was at, and so he saw me singing, lead that particular night, and so he was like, oh, okay, well, that's cool, he can sing. So, he sort of kept that in mind, and then when they needed a guitarist, they needed somebody that also could sing, so they asked me. Also, I had recorded an EP back in 92 that never really got released or anything, but it was one where I played all the parts, so I played drums and bass and did all vocals and all that. I sent that to those guys, just, hey, check this out, kind of thing. So, so they already knew, that, I had a high voice anyway, and could, sing, the high harmonies that were necessary for Toys.
Now, one of the things that I'm really interested in, especially when it comes to Dirty Looks, is that so many people, came in and out of that band. Now, did you find that hard to kind of develop a feeling of cohesion within the band?
Yeah, I mean, for the entire... it seems like it was Henrik and I, because we always kind of ended up being roommates. We had a few different drummers and bass players go through. It was two drummers and two bass players after Jack and June left. But after the band broke up at the end of 93, which is when I moved to Texas to join Dangerous Toys, then they reformed a little bit after that. And from that point on, I think they had a lot of different members.
So I know that you've done a lot of work. You've written a book about guitar and DVDs you had out there, and
your homework, huh?
we do.
Yeah.
And it's sorry, got me off guard with that one. We try. So of course you teach. You're doing your guitar lessons. You're teaching the guitar lessons. So you're probably a good person to ask the next generation, not the one currently making music. The one coming up. So do you think that that's still the desire to be the guitarist? Because music industry has changed so much. But do you think the desire to be on stage, be the guitarist, be that rock star? Do you still find that that's that's out there from the people that approach you for guitar lessons?
Yeah, I think it's sort of changed a little bit, but I think that you know, there's the new crop of guitar heroes and things, and you know, there's the guitar is an ever evolving kind of thing. So I think that they'll always have, you know, new people to emulate. And just judging from, you know, my own students, I have, you know, several that are just really want to, you know, want to make this a living and just really want to go for it and take it, you know, as far as it can go.
What do you tell them is, you know, what do you what kind of, I don't know, inspirational quote do you give them, or if any, that just kind of to make it? Because, I mean, you buck the odds, you've made it as a guitarist, but how do you tell them to, if they want to go for it, to go for it?
If there's any doubt at all, then, I mean, anybody that you would have to say that to isn't going to follow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like when I was, you know, that age, I remember telling people, you know, I said, oh, I'm going to succeed or I'm going to die. And it's one of the two. And that's, you know, I had that sort of mindset, you know, it's like, this is going to happen one way or the other. This is, you know, absolutely going to happen. So I think the ones that, you know, would carry on and go through the various, you know, sacrifices, I suppose, that are necessary to reach any sort of level of success, there's no stopping them.
I mean, you guys were, when you were, you know, trying to break in, weren't you getting like $20 a gig or something like that, like $20-$25 a gig as a band, you know, for some of those shows?
No, it was five.
For a band? I thought that was a piece.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dirty Looks, before we got signed, was $5 a day for the touring, which most of took place with the tour vehicle was my Chevette. But we played, you know, we played up and down the East Coast, down to North Carolina a lot, and Virginia, and I don't know. I just remember going all over the place. I think Ohio, and so all those places, and I sold the car after all that was done. I sold it for about $25 to the scrap heap because it was just done.
Yeah. You know what? If you're going out there making that little and you're still doing it, that's the dedication it takes, though.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm talking about. And I think everybody, you know, was sort of that same mind. It's like, you know, but certainly, you know, I also said around that time, I said, as soon as I start doing this for the money, I'm just going to quit. Oh, yeah, just because it's, you know, it's really more just the passion for doing that. Thanks.
Well, and what I'm really interested in
as opposed to delusions of being rich. You know?
Sure. Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, we're rich too, but it's also delusional. But
we looked up our net worth on the internet yesterday, and let me tell you, if only we had that kind of money. What those websites said.
But yeah, it's. Like, one of the things that I'm interested in is, like, you talk about the touring and traveling up and down, especially, you know, in the car and that kind of thing. And, like, how important were those elements to shaping who you are? And do you think that the people that you're teaching, like, is it possible for them to get that same kind of education?
Well, I don't think that you can learn what it's like to be, you know, on the road, especially, like, the hard touring thing. You can't really describe that to somebody. They would just kind of have to experience it. And almost everybody that achieves any kind of level of success probably has to go through some of that, you know, the cars or like in Dirty Looks, we spent years in the van also, you know. So there's van tours, we did bus tours, and so it was quite a combination of all that. But yeah, that would be that kind of thing is would be hard to describe. I mean, I could give them pointers for, you know, things to know about, you know, the etiquette and all that. But as far as, you know, preparing them for touring and stuff like that, that's, I think you just learn from doing it.
But are the same kind of tours even available? I know that, you know, back in those days, it was, you could go out for 200 shows a year, 250 shows a year, but now, like, the tours are so much smaller that is it possible to get that same volume?
Yeah, that I'm not sure of, you know, because, like, Dangerous Toys now does, instead of going out on tours, what we do is they're called fly dates, where we fly to, you know, a certain city, and we'll play two or three shows and then come back home. And then we'll, you know, fly to another place and another place. So rather than, you know, jumping in the bus and doing like 14 nights in a row like we used to do.
Sorry, you know, can we, since we're talking about a new album for the Dangerous Toys, I don't know if you guys are thinking about it anyways already, because I mean, you're a ways out, obviously, but you realize you guys are gonna have to really step it up with the album cover, because Dangerous Toys has some of the best album covers. You can't let us down. So I hope you guys are thinking about it now.
Oh, the album cover is done.
Oh, is it? Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
Cool.
That's awesome. And you know, I also, one of my all-time favorite album covers, actually, even though I can't quite, I don't know why, but Turn of the Screw is so memorable.
It really is.
Yeah, that was a strange one. It reminded me of, like, you know, Led Zeppelin or Pink Floyd or something like that. I think that's what Henrik had in mind. That was, you know, totally his idea to just have, you know, this peaceful family sitting around and a screw coming through the roof like that. So yeah, Henrik was a really creative guy.
It's this Leave It to Beaver scene.
Writing songs. And, yeah, yeah. That's,
yeah, and then that. It was so
in mind.
Yeah, it was great. You know, we say we do our research, and just to prove it even more here, I wonder if I can read a quote to you from 1999 that you did, if you don't mind, because I'd love to get your thoughts on it now. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's actually a massive quote. But in 1999, it's a huge quote. But I'm just going to take a couple portions of it. But in 1999, you were asked about how the internet's affecting the music industry. And you could probably take away I nicknamed myself the futurist. You could take it, I think, because I think you're pretty dead on here, all, you know, 20 years later. But you said it's already had a huge impact on the internet, on the industry, but nothing compared to the internet or to the impact the internet will have a few years from now. I believe that major labels, that we know them, will be history. The small aggressive labels will have a chance to succeed where they didn't have before. Bands will be able to make and market their own CDs without the help of major labels. And then a little bit further down, you said, I think overall it'll be good for music, and the people will be open to more styles of music and be more active in choosing what they listen to instead of just listening to and buying what they are force-fed by mass media like MTV and radio. Do you remember that? Do you remember saying any of that back then? And do you have any thoughts on the internet now, and, you know, and well, yeah, how scary on you were two decades ago in talking about it?
Yeah, I guess for 20 years ago, because that is kind of become the case now. You know, I mean, you have Spotify, which I thought that rock was actually dead until I got Spotify, And then I was able through Spotify to find out about all these, you know, all these awesome, cool other rock bands that actually had, you know, lots of followers, and found out that they're actually, you know, touring and playing shows. You can find out where they're playing on Spotify. And so that's turned me on to a whole lot of new bands, and got me excited about music in general, and rock specifically, all over again. So I think that's been a really great thing. But yeah, the major labels, they did go away, didn't they? And and it leveled the playing field of you know, whereas smaller bands can now compete on the same level as larger bands. So, and people do actually take a little more active part in figuring out what it is that they like, and, you know, there's not quite so much of the following the herd and liking a certain thing just because it's everybody else likes it. You know, people kind of, my experience is that more people kind of you know, pick and choose what they like, because there's so much to choose from.
It's true. I was actually just I was getting Brett to listen to a new album I discovered from a band from France called Black Rain, and it's just this good, you know, hard rock album. And they're from France. If I found them on Google Music, and if I'm not looking for that type of music and actively looking, I don't find it. I got to work hard for it, but it's there for me. I can find it, decide if I like it, and decide if I want to listen to the whole album. I happen to love the album. Recommend it to you. And
I'll check that out. I like a band called Electric Mary that I would never have known about, but they're in Australia, I think. And and then I go, you know, on Spotify, I'll listen to the radio station that's associated with Electric Mary, and then a lot of other bands that I haven't heard of also that might sound kind of along those lines. You know, I find out about them too. So I think it's pretty cool. It's almost like the tape trading days of, you know, way, way long ago, you know, where bands like, you know, Metallica and stuff like that just got big through the underground, through the whole, you know, somebody sends somebody a tape. It's like, here, check this out, you know, this band from San Francisco.
Well, and isn't that, you know, also, so one of the great things about Hollywood Hairspray, to kind of bring it full circle, is that it's
exactly
a mixtape,
yeah.
And so you've got all these bands on there, and you're able to hear it and be like, oh yeah, totally, this one stands out, you know, and yeah, you're gonna be able to lead out from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And then, you know, hopefully somebody would, like, they would hear one of the bands and like, let's say they heard Rumor on there, and they might, you know, search 99 Crimes, and then they might find our video for, like, Coming Down Like Rain, which is possibly even a better representation of, you know, what 99 Crimes is. And so if they saw the video for Coming Down Like Rain, then they might go, oh, okay, yeah, I get it. And then they would be more apt to either download or somehow get the album, or buy a CD from Paris Records.
Yeah, for sure. And or even, like, hopefully get a chance to see the show, because I, you know,
come out to see us play live. Yeah,
because if you can get that name recognition of the band out there, then even, like, especially when you have, like, apps like Bands in Town, it's one of those cases where, like, as you're filtering through, it's just like, even if you've only heard them a few times, it's like, oh, 99 Crimes, I know that, and then you just start checking it out, and it's just like, oh, hey, they're playing in my area, great, I can go see them. So yeah, it's like, the internet has its negatives, but it does have a certain amount of positives when you are trying to build a band and grow a sound.
Yeah, I agree with that, and it's and you don't have to have the mega machine of money of a major label behind it as much anymore, you know.
Well, you really want to make me happy. Why don't all eight or all the bands from the album come together for one big show? You and we'll have Danny Vaughn on there and Jeff Scott Soto, and you know, I'd be pretty damn happy. I'd travel for that.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah, that would be a cool show, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, hey, if Motley Crue can come back, anything can happen.
Right.
We all knew that was happening, didn't we? We all knew. Like, yeah. How long is this retirement lasting?
As long as the money, until the money runs out. But
yeah,
I can't blame.
Yeah,
him.
I thought
I hope to have fun.
A little longer.
Brett, do you have any more questions? I think I've covered pretty much my entire list. The one that I keep in my head because I'm too lazy to write things down.
Well, I just wanted to, like, the last thing that I wanted to talk about is just you being from Austin, you know, like as a band and stuff like that. Like, it's got such a vibrant music scene that, you know, how important is having a vibrant music scene to having bands and being able to play live?
Well, it all comes down to like how many rock clubs are in your, you know, within either the area or, you know, locally or regionally. And, you know, how much opportunity does the band have to play? Cause that's, you know, how bands really, really grow as far as, you know, as a band playing live and also, you know, getting a name around. So, but with the internet though, you know, it's possible to just come out of like some small town and really, you know, and really make a name for yourself. So some of the bigger bands, you know, they've just come out of these small towns. So I wouldn't say that it's any any real big help being, you know, from a music town, other than the fact that, you know, there's places to play.
Yeah, no, makes good sense.
But yeah, and as far as rock goes, you know, in Austin, Texas, there's really only kind of a small handful of, you know, rock and roll bands that are, you know, original rock and roll bands that are out of Austin, Texas. So.
Well, we're going to have to, when the time is right, when Dangerous Toys is ready, we're going to have to try and get you and Jason on together if we're lucky and talk about the new album. That'd be so, you know, great. And can't wait for that. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, can't wait. I'm going to listen to this 99 Crime album many more times. It's fantastic. And, you know, it's your chance now to promote, you know, promote whatever you'd like.
Oh, I was just going to say, if you go on, you know, facebook.com/99crimes, there's a whole bunch of videos and people can search 99 Crimes on YouTube and find a bunch of live videos. And like I said, the videos were Coming Down Like Rain, which we shot in an old haunted jail, an old haunted prison.
I knew it was a prison. I didn't realize it was haunted.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, it was on a bunch of those Ghost Hunter shows, you know, people say, there's a lot of different people that have reported, you know, all kinds of paranormal activity there, so, like that video and things like that, they could see, say, 99crimes.com, we'll bring them to our Reverb Nation page, and there's a lot of information and music on that as well.
Awesome. Well, Paul, thank you so much for stopping by the show. We really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. And
thanks for having me on.
I know that we're totally anticipating the next 99 Crimes album, and I'm really happy. I'm really happy that that we were able to hear the Hollywood Hairspray so that we could really discover 99 Crimes.
Yeah. I think it's the compilation idea is great to, you know, that people can discover things that they wouldn't otherwise know about. So it's a cool thing.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Awesome. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Hey, anytime, anytime. We'll get you on again. No question about it.
Yeah. No, you want to talk again for another hour tomorrow? That's okay.
Yeah. All right. Have a good night, Paul.
Thanks very much, Paul. Have a good night.
Thanks. All right. You too. Thanks, guys.
Talk to you later. Bye.